For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome you all to the Parsha class of Emor 5773. Actually, I'm not really talking to anybody live in this room. I'm talking to anybody who is listening to this after the fact on a CD or online. Because this past Friday, when we had our class, we did not have a recorder. So I'm going to repeat the class, but there's nobody in the room. That means we're not going to be able to have wonderful comments, and that means that I do not have my ordinary charge that I get from seeing the faces of those who are always eager to learn and to deepen their awareness and understanding of Torah. So please bear with me, and if you have any questions, I'd love to hear them somehow, sometime. Parshas Emor deals first and very much with the laws which are specific to the Kohanim, to the priests. You know that this year we are in the process of an approach whereby our classes and our take-home lessons are hoped to be something that any Jew at any time would find meaningful. As I was thinking about how to address my comments for Emor, I just, in a flash, it came to me that the most important message from Emor, and that which is most vital and most meaningful to all Jews, is related to the fact that really we are all Kohanim. We are all priests. We're not priests in the formal sense. We're not Kohanim in the sense that we bring offerings in the temple, because actually even the real Kohanim are not able to do that. But we are priests in the sense that to the world, the Jewish people are the Kohanim. This is something that the Torah states openly. In Parshas Yisro, as Hashem was preparing Moshe Rabbeinu to go up to Mount Sinai and to receive the Torah, and there were several messages back and forth between Hashem and the people and Hashem. One of the most famous verses in the Torah. This is Shemos, Perek Yud Tes 19, Pasuk Vav 6. V'atem tiyuli mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. You shall be to me, you, the Jewish people, shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. As Art Scroll adds, although usually translated as priests, the word Kohanim in the context of this verse means that the entire nation of Israel is to be dedicated to leading the world toward an understanding and acceptance of God's mission. In the ritual sense, priests too can be seen as having this function. So, what Kohanim are to the Jewish people, the Jewish people are to the world. That being said, don't you think we need, as Jews, to have a little bit of a discussion and maybe something that recurs quite often about what does it mean to be priests of the world? I mean, do we even know who we are? Do we even know how did we get here, and what was all the background that went into us becoming priests? I mean, if we have a job, then we better know what it is, and we better know who we are. I remember hearing years ago in the yeshiva that there was a student that was maturing, and he was getting ready to leave the yeshiva and embark on a, hopefully, a lifelong career of teaching Torah to students. to students of, I don't know if it was elementary or middle school or high school, but he wanted to get a succinct, you know, charge from his Rebbe as to what his mission is as a teacher of Torah to children. His Rebbe was Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, of blessed memory, the great mechanech, the great educator in the early yeshiva movement in the United States. We have talked about him. He was the Rebbe of our Rebbe, Rav Yaakov Weinberg, of blessed memory. And this student went in to get, you know, the last words of advice or of guidance before he left the yeshiva from his Rebbe, Rav Huttner. He approached the Rebbe and said, "Rebbe, what is my primary goal as teacher of Torah?" And Rav Huttner answered in 3-4 words, "Ata v'chartanu mikol ha'amim," which is a quote from the Yom Tov prayers. You, the Jewish people. No, sorry. Ata, you, Hashem, v'chartanu, have chosen us mikol ha'amim, from all of the other nations. That is your mission, to transmit this realization to your students. The children have to know that they are part of a chosen nation. The chosen nation. Chosen by God. Chosen for what? Okay, that's what we're going to talk about. Every Jew, especially today, do you think we know all of this? Do you think we understand both historically, both spiritually, practically, what it means to be a Jew? So on this Parsha of Emor, when we learn about the Kohanim, let's really digress and figure out the Kohanim that all of us are. One other reference to the Parsha, which is relevant to this theme, is and really beginning of an approach, the beginning of our journey to being a part of the chosen nation. In Perek Chaf Beis, Pasuk Lamed Aleph in Lamed Beis, that's chapter 22, verses 31 and 32, on page 680 and 681 in the Art Scroll, the verses read, "Ushmartem mitzvosai, Vasisem osam ani Hashem. You shall observe my commandments and perform them. I am Hashem." Velo sechalulu, the Torah continues, velo sechalulu eshem kodshi, v'nigdashti v'soch b'nei Yisrael, ani Hashem mekadishchem. You shall not desecrate my holy name, rather I should be sanctified among the children of Israel. This pasuk, the second one, Lamed Beis, is well known and often quoted, paraphrased. The phrases Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem, bringing sanctity to the name of God, or, God forbid, desecrating the name of God. And the Torah obligates us to keep this in mind always. Do not desecrate the name of God, rather sanctify it. And what I learned from my friend Alan, who provides me with wonderful source material, that there is actually a deliberate reason why these two verses are juxtaposed. The one that says, "You shall keep mitzvos," and the one that says, "Do not desecrate, but rather sanctify." The Chasam Sof, I'm reading from a book called Growth Through Torah by Rabbi Zelig Pliskin. The Chasam Sofer commented that verse 31 is an introduction to verse 32. Rashi states that the phrase "you shall observe my commandments" refers to Torah, studying Torah, because that is the primary way that we come to observe, is by studying. Therefore, the Torah immediately warns those who study Torah against Chilul Hashem, desecration of the Almighty's name, and obliges those who study to make a Kiddush Hashem, a sanctification of the Almighty's name. The behavior of anyone who studies Torah should be on such a level that it will be an expression of the sanctity of the Almighty. people who observe, those who study Torah, should be able to say that the Torah gives those who study it much wisdom and promotes excellence in their daily behavior. In other words, the Torah is saying, who really desecrates or sanctifies the name of God? Those who study and observe the Torah. Because how does anybody know what God says, what the Torah says? By looking at those who study it and who observe it. So we see right away one of the most powerful ways that we are the Kohanim. We are the ambassadors of God in the world. Because if we, the Jewish people, people of the book, study and observe Torah, then people are looking at us to form their opinion and their impression about what the Torah is and what the Torah says and what kind of people the people of the Torah are. And that is how they base their opinions of God, the author of the Torah. So this is at the core of who we are. This must be on our list of lessons for any Jew at any time. So how do we do this? How do we strengthen ourselves? How do we make awaken ourselves to recognize the specialness and the charge of being a Jew? I was thinking if there's any good reading material that I could share with you, words of wisdom that could explain really in a very fundamental way, historically and philosophically, what a Jew is. One of the great sources of Jewish teaching and Jewish philosophy is the Kuzari. The Kuzari was written by Rav Yehuda Halevi around the time of the Rishonim, around the time of Rashi, let's say. That would be the second, the second millennium of the Common Era, so around the beginning of the 1000s, 1100. And there's actually some discussion whether the Kuzari was an actual manuscript of a live debate, or it was just the author's creative way of presenting it. There is a nation called the Khazars or the Khazars, and they lived around Turkey, and there was a king, and this king supposedly was a seeker of truth and a seeker of religions, and he called together, in the first century of the Common Era, a Christian leader and a Muslim leader and a Jewish leader, and I said, each of you should present your religion to me, and the one that I am convinced of the most, I will join your nation. And the Kuzari is either, okay, according to one account, that is the actual rabbi's presentation, which was found in a manuscript, and Rabbi Yehuda Levi then edited it and published it, or Rabbi Yehuda Levi, as we said, creatively designed a teaching based on an imaginary scene. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Rav Yehuda Halevi's words are timeless. They are quoted by every authority. I remember one time in this class, I wanted to share with you something on the perspective of Eretz Yisrael, and so I opened up Rav Volba Sefer to see what he had to say on Eretz Yisrael, and the opening line is, what more can we say that hasn't been said by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari about Eretz Yisrael? And then he goes and quotes it, and then his treatment of Eretz Yisrael is based on the words of the Kuzari. So I said, this is a basic topic. What is a Jew? Who is a Jew? What are we doing? Let's see what the Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, has to say about this. So in this new edition that I have, it's not written as a dialogue, but rather written in essay form. Sure enough, that's the second chapter. The first chapter is about faith. The second chapter is about Israel the people. So what I did is I just checked a couple of excerpts here. a few sentences here and there to try to capture some of the richness, again, both from a historical perspective as well as a philosophical perspective, something that really touches both the mind and the heart and the soul of what a Jew is. And if we can walk away a little bit more aware, a little bit more proud, a little bit more charged of what it means to be a Jew, then we will have accomplished something in this Parshas Emor. The effect of divine influence is felt in the world through its effect on the Jewish people. It could be said that the relationship of the divine influence to the Jewish people and the Jewish people to the world is the same as that of the human body to the heart. Just as the body receives its life and strength from the heart, so too does the entire world receive divine influence through the Jewish people. Okay, the divine influence, which is what we may call Kuzari calls it Ha'inyan Ha'eloki, the divine influence, which is the Shekhinah, the intervention, or the way that God interacts with the world, comes via Israel. We are the conduit. Just like the heart is the that which empowers the powers the body, we are the conductors of divine influence for the entire world. In order for us to understand what our mission is, we really have to understand what the world's mission is, or what the purpose of the creation of the world is. The creation of the basic elements was in order for the inanimate, like stones and metals, to emerge, followed by plants, animals, and man, and finally, the pure essence of man. Interesting. There's animals, there's man, and then there is the pure essence of man, the way man was created with the potential to be. Not all men live up to the highest potential of man, capital mankind. The entire universe was created for the sake of this esteemed people. Who is the pure essence of man? Jewry. Us. Am Yisrael. The entire universe was created for the sake of this esteemed people in order that divine influence be attached to it. This essence, Jewry, was created for the sake of an even more treasured essence, namely the prophets and the pious among them. In other words, we're all part of a team, and we're all trying to put our kochos together to create the highest form of man that can be. One day, we will have a Moshe Rabbeinu among us. We will have a Shmuel Hanavi. We will have a David HaMelech. And through him, with his guidance and his leadership and his influence, we will reach as close to this essence of man that is possible for us. Observe how divine influence attached itself to Abraham, then to the multitude of his chosen descendants, finally to the Holy Land, where the Jewish people developed and attained spiritual excellence. Okay, this is going back in history, the history of the Torah. What God was trying to create in our history, in the biblical history, was create the closest thing to this perfected man, this divine essence within man. That was what God was creating. That's the genesis of Bereishis and continuing on with Shemos, to try to get an entire nation to embody these attributes. God protected them in Egypt, where he caused them to multiply and become great. He tended them as one tends a tree with solid roots until it finally produces perfect fruit, resembling the original stock from which it was planted. So too the perfect seeds of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov produce excellent and perfect results in the personalities of Moshe, Aaron, Miriam, Bezalel, Eliyahu, the princes of the tribes, the Shivim Zekanim, the 70 elders, were all permanently endowed with the prophetic spirit. Yoshua, Kalev, Hur, son of Miriam, and many others who were also developed from the original prototypes. It was at that time that the Jewish people became worthy of having divine radiance and providence made visible upon them. That's when Hashem said, you're ready for Matan Torah. You're ready for the revelation. Because you, as a nation, as an nation led by individuals, to all come together now and receive the divine influence in a way that has never been revealed in the history of the world. Were it not for the Jews, there would be no Torah. Only by virtue of their great spiritual essence were they worthy of receiving it. This is amazing because we're about to celebrate Shavuos. Shavuos is the commemoration or the anniversary of the Jewish people reaching the highest pinnacle where God said, there is enough quality in you as a people that I can finally reveal my Torah, my wisdom to man. It took 2,448 years to get to this moment. So he says, here you are, here's my Torah, and here are all the commandments. You may ask, what people could possibly observe all these regulations? The answer is, the nation in whose midst the divine presence is always present, exacting punishment and bestowing reward immediately. If we lived on the level of the Jewish people in the Midbar, in the desert, after having received the Torah, we could fulfill all the mitzvahs. Observe what Joshua said. You cannot serve God, for He is a holy God. He's a jealous God. Nevertheless, Joshua's community was so zealously observant that when it came to the ban on taking any of the consecrated things of Jericho, only one person, Achan, was disobedient from among more than 600,000. It's a pretty good record. His punishment followed immediately, just as it did in the case of Miriam, who was immediately affected with tsaras for speaking about her brother Moshe. Now, did Moshe say to the other nations of the world that they should also observe God's Torah? No. He invited only his people, those speaking his holy tongue, to adhere to its laws and obey its rules. Why was this exclusive to the Jews? Would it not have been better if all mankind had been guided on the true path? Would this not have been more consistent with divine wisdom? With divine wisdom? The very nature of the question indicates that you have forgotten the concept we previously stated concerning the genealogy of Adam's descendants and how the divine spirit came to rest on the one person who is elite, chosen from his brothers, and who is the essence of his father. Okay, this, I think, goes back perhaps to the first chapter, which we didn't cover. Or maybe other parts of this. I'm just excerpting. Now, what's so special about the Jewish people? I mean, what if you have a Jew that doesn't observe? So, would you say he's not really living up to the calling of a Jew, or more importantly, does he not have it in him because he's not doing it? And what about a non-Jew who is more religious, more observant than a Jew? Is it arbitrary? Is it whoever keeps the commandments bears that divine influence and whoever doesn't? No, no, no. You ever heard the expression that we mentioned a few weeks ago? Ayid is Ayid. A Jew is a Jew. Says the Kuzari, even a rebellious member of the people which received the Torah is preferable to one who has no share in the Torah. That means preferable in terms of this mission of possessing and bearing the divine influence. For the divine Torah has already given him the potential of leading a spiritual life and reaching the level of the angels. Even though his rebelliousness has disturbed his potential and tarnished it, traces of his essence remain, and the fire of his yearning for it is constant. Even if he were given the choice, he would never choose to join the ranks of those who were not given the Torah. Khuzari claims that every Jew has a spark of Jewishness in him, holiness. He would never want to give it up. No more would a sick, pain-racked person accept the choice of being a horse or a fish or a bird in order to be happy and pain-free at the cost of surrendering the intelligence which allows him to approach the divine. Every Jew has that inside of him. Jewry amid the nations is like the heart amid the organs of the body, as we said before. Among them, it is at the same time most subject to disease, and yet the healthiest of them all. The heart is constantly exposed to all sorts of diseases and is affected continually by worry, sadness, fear, revenge, hate, love, and danger. Its temperament is subject to constant change, moving between excess and deficiency. It is affected by inferior nourishment, by movement, exertion, sleep, and wakefulness. All of these conditions affect the heart, even when the other limbs and organs are not so affected. In this respect, the heart is more subject to sickness than all the other organs. Which nation has the most turmoil in its life than the Jews? Again, understand that the difference between the Jew and the other nations is inborn, or is deep in our souls. Because there's also the Gentile convert that he speaks of in a little bit. Do not be overly impressed with those Gentile nations who have distanced themselves from idolatry and energetically declare the unity of God. We're talking about, let's say, the monotheistic religions. You know, the king of the Khazars realized he's not going to be a pagan. But should I be a Jew, a Muslim, or a Christian? All three are monotheistic and not pagan. Do not consider them worthy of praise while criticizing the Jews because of their past history of idol worship. You know, we're a bunch of hypocrites because we're supposed to be the Jews, and yet we've had some of the biggest idolaters. What about some of our kings? On the contrary, consider that the majority of them the other nations lean toward heresy and endeavor to spread their heretical beliefs to the masses through poetry, song, proclaiming there's no ruler to reward or punish man according to his actions. Such a doctrine has never been associated with Jewry. Those among the Jews who were influenced to worship idols did so not as a substitute for their own faith, which they continued to observe, but as a supplemental observance from which they hope to derive some specific benefit or advantage. This is very important to understand the Navi. When we say that the Jews were idolaters, you hear what the Khuzari is saying? They didn't go off the derech and reject Judaism. They continued to observe the mitzvos. They just also did a little bit of idolatry on the side. That is Ahav, that is Yeravam, the great Menashe, the great idolatrous kings. They had just adapted and supplemented their Judaism with a little bit of idol worship. They would never give up the practice of the Torah. Such anticipation of material benefits was universally prevalent in their time. It would be kind of like a Jew who observes the Torah and the mitzvot, but he also, you know, he's also a very, you know, he's very involved in the stock market. You know, now, you could say that if a Jew is fully faithful on God, he would, you know, do his follow his occupation, and he would ask God to provide, and he would wait for God to provide his livelihood. You know, I'm not saying that the stock market is idol worship, but it's kind of like adopting something that the world does. You know, because we see that it works. So a Jew also wants to try some of that too. That's the way the idol worship was amongst the Jews. So don't ever compare the two. Don't compare a Jew who serves idols with a non-Jew. You know, who doesn't? There's no comparison. All right. Now we're getting to the end. The question is, where are we today? I mean, are we still this good? Are we still the bearers of this spark? Do we still have this pintle yid? Of course we do. And of course, we're a shadow of what we once were in terms of active practice. Even 1,000 years ago, the Khazari writes, the Jewish people today is like a body without either head or heart. Let's get real. The Jewish people in exile have been a shadow of what they were in the times of the temple, in the times of the desert. It is more correct to say that Jewry today is not even a body, because in reality we are only scattered limbs, such as the dry bones which Ezekiel saw in his vision. Nevertheless, these residual bones, which once supported head, heart, breath, soul, and intellect, are genuine remains of full natural vitality. These bones are far superior to statues of stone or plaster, even though they have been given heads, eyes, ears, and all other limbs. These statues were never endowed with the spirit of life, nor can they ever be the recipients of life, since they are only imitations of man, not the real man. Similarly, I'm just reading, sorry. The dead nations who would like to acquire a likeness to the living people can achieve nothing more than an external resemblance. They erect temples for God, but no sign of his presence is ever visible therein. They become recluses and ascetics in order to attain prophecy, but prophecy is never revealed to them. They become disobedient, rebellious, and wicked, yet they're not consumed by heavenly fire, nor is pestilence sent down upon them with the suddenness that shows it is obviously God's punishment for their disobedience and wickedness. The way that God responds in our parsha today, this B'chukos Sai, the Tochacha, if you don't observe the commandments, you will be banished swiftly from the land. That's because what we do makes a difference. The other nations, they don't have consequence and they don't have the rewards. And let's close with this. There is an additional point I would like to make. God has a secret and wise design for keeping us in exile for so long. This plan can be compared to the process of disintegration, which a seed undergoes when it falls into the ground. As far as the human eye can see, the seed is transformed into earth and water as it rots. No trace is left of the seed itself. The truth, however, is that through divine wisdom, the seed dominates and influences the earth and the water, absorbing them, causing their transformation into its own substance. This divinely bestowed nature of the seed causes it to develop from one stage to the next, refining the external elements and using them, the earth and the water, to reach its initial stages of growth. After it takes root, the seed gradually expels its outer husks and other extraneous elements until the pure essence of the original seed begins to appear. In time, the seed will have the ability to develop into fruit that duplicates the fruit from which it originally sprang. Similarly, even though it appears that the other faiths reject the Torah of Moshe, they are in effect transformed by it and are influenced by its authentic truths. These various faiths merely serve to introduce and prepare the way for the long-expected Mashiach, who is the seed and the essence of the fruit. The affliction and distress that plague us are meant to purge us of all impurities and to remove the stains of our iniquities. In this state, we are better prepared to serve God and to fulfill the commandments of His Torah. It is in the very process of our purification and cleansing that the entire world becomes permeated by divine influence. The Jewish people, while lacking material strength and resources, is nevertheless rich in spiritual content. In the material sense, because of its smallness, poverty, and dispersion, it is hardly noticed among the other nations. Yet because of the traces of the divine Torah which it retains, the Jewish people is welded together into a firmly established unit. It's a lot of reading, a lot of material. Just know how special you are as a Jew. Just know that if you forget, you can look back and read this and be reminded. Just know that although we are like dry bones, and if we feel a sense of vitality, unfortunately, the vast majority of our brethren do not feel that sense of vitality or that sense of awareness of who they even are. Just know that whatever we were, whatever we were supposed to be, we still are. We're just undergoing a stage of decomposition for the sake of rebirth and growth. We are living through that growth. We are witnessing in our own lifetime the beginning of the sprouting of the messianic times. Just know that we are part of that great nation that said Ma'aseh V'Nishma on Mount Sinai. Just know that we have all of the spiritual potential within us. In whatever measure it's been actualized, just know that Atav Achartanu Mikol Ha'amim is probably the most important thing that we can ever know about ourselves. So there you have it. Parshas Emor. It's not just about offerings in the Mishkan and the Tabernacle. It is about who we are as Jews, and that's any Jew, and that's any time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.